In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I will be discussing our predictions for 2014. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 162. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Mike?
Well, I got some exciting news. I sent out an email this morning to my launch list and invited a bunch of people to come out and test the Linux functionality
of AudioShark. Very cool. So AudioShark is now live, right? If people go to audioshark.com, they're able to sign up for a free trial, download the installer, and get their server audited.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so thanks. So all that stuff's up and running. But like I said, I'm in last week's episode. I mean, I'm still going to my launch list, and I plan on individually emailing people and trying to get them onboarded and making sure that anyone who was on the launch list will get like some extra special attention just because they were there first. And I feel like they deserve a little bit of a extra handholding. But you know, also just establishing that relationship will make sure that you know I'm getting the feedback that I need from people to help flesh out anything else that people need. So it's not like I'm just throwing this out there and saying, okay, AudioShark is launched and hands off and doing nothing but marketing at this point. It's really, I almost feel like it's still sort of a beta launch.
I saw you use the word concierge in the email. Help people get here like up to 1 hour of my concierge service. So that's cool. That's a nice offer. Good luck doing that in December. B2B stuff slows down so much in December. So obviously, if there's not a big response to this email, you know, picking stuff back up in January is not a bad way to go.
Yeah, in the past week, I've had two different companies tell me, hey, I'd love to look at this, but right now is a bad time. Get back to me in the first quarter or January or whatever.
So the first month of drip of the public launch just ended. So I sent out the big launch email on November 6th, and we have a 21-day trial. So that all closed at the end of November, and quite pleased with revenue growth. I probably won't talk much about revenue after this, but I did want to say that first month of revenue was $7,000.
Very nice.
So yeah, I'm quite pleased with that. I figured that with the launch list as big as it was, if I didn't get over 5,000, I was going to be quite disappointed. And so to hit just over 7, and then it looks like we'll grow a little bit, may even grow a little bit, flatline or grow in December, which is saying a lot because that's always a pretty stagnant month. But I'm happy with it. Now the real work begins.
That's one of the downsides of like launching the product is you're fighting all this time to get to the actual launch, and you almost feel like you should be able to take a break at that point, and it's just totally not even remotely close to accurate.
Yep. Now it's all the experimentation, you know, getting all the marketing engine going. How about you? What else is going on?
The other thing in terms of AudioShark, several people had actually asked me to prioritize a lot of the things that AudioShark is doing. So that's probably about 3/4 of the way done right now. Everything on the Windows side is done. And then there's a lot of stuff that is on the Linux side that is probably halfway done at this point. But I would expect the next week or two that stuff will be completed. And then, you know, my policy developer is going to continue working on all that stuff. Some of the attendees at MicroConf Europe had kind of challenged me to do a little bit more of a fundraiser for a charity based on the talk that I gave. And if you're interested in doing any sort of year-end donations to charities, go to kazoochallenge.com. And I'll be running a fundraiser there to help, you know, small children who have gotten cancer and basically just need a little bit of extra help. And you'll be able to sign up for a mailing list. I'll be doing a write-up and analysis of all the marketing efforts afterwards, probably in January. Just kind of talk about what sorts of things worked and what things didn't. The website again is kazoochallenge.com, and like I said, you can go sign up there if you're looking for any sort of year-end donations or if you're just looking to help out people with cancer.
Right, and this ties into your kazoo story that you made during MicroConf Europe and about how different messages sold more kazoos in person or didn't. So if someone's wondering what the heck you're talking about, go back and listen to our MicroConf Europe wrap-up episode. So I have a couple things. One is regarding Hittail, and I actually want to send a shout-out, a thank you to Brennan Dunn of planscope.io. He's a Hittail user, and he's also actually been one of the big early supporters of Drip and a really good first customer there. He has made a suggestion on how to get some value back into Hittail or get more value value back, because obviously Hittail has lost some value to customers because of Google's recent not provided move. And at one point I had considered tying into the only place that Google still provides keywords, and that's inside the Google Webmaster Tools area. But I hadn't done it because there was a lack of data in there. But recently they've actually beefed that up, surprisingly enough, as they've killed off all the other SEO tools and, you know, made SEO harder. They have added some data in there, and I now have enough that I can run the Hittail algorithm on that data. So I'll be implementing some stuff here in the next couple weeks, and I'm pretty excited at the thought of, you know, being one of the few keyword tools that can get value out of Google keywords, frankly. The other thing is, there's a really interesting article. It's called The SaaS Analytics Lifestyle. It's at dirtyanalytics.com. We'll link that up in the show notes. But it's basically an expansion of what you and I talked about when we answered Andre Butov's question about how to do the early stage SaaS marketing before you have enough volume to split test. What should you be doing? And this guy talks about the three stages. And the first stage is like, before you can see trends, it's kind of like things that don't scale stage. And then there's the seeing trends stage, and then there's the optimizing stage. And he talks about which tools and approaches you can use in each of those. And again, we'll link it up in the show notes, but that's at dirtyanalytics.com. And finally, I just read a book that I wanted to recommend to the audience. It's called Masters of Doom, and it's about the guys who started id Software, the two Johns who built Doom and Quake and a bunch of other games. Fascinating book, awesome tale, you know, startup tale. And then, of course, once again, like with Twitter and Facebook and these other startups, the egos get in the way eventually. And after these guys bought a bunch of Ferraris, they wind up, you know, kicking each other out of the company, and the company doesn't work because the two geniuses behind it aren't together anymore. And overall, it's just a really inspiring story in terms of the early days of when they're actually cranking 100-hour weeks in a beach house somewhere. There's like four or five of them. It's a lake house, and they're building these games. It's such a fun ride. Nothing in here will help you launch your business aside from motivation, right? There's no tactical stuff. There's nothing that you should follow in terms of marketing approaches or anything, because these guys were just crazy 20-year-olds who coded so much and discovered these amazing game engines, or they invented them. And unless you're going to go do that, there's not much overlap with the kind of stuff we do. But overall, one of the better audiobooks that I've listened to probably in the past 6 months.
I think I remember hearing or reading recently that John Carmack is officially no longer associated with ID Software.
How interesting. Yeah, because John Romero got kicked out or left years before. I didn't know. Because the book was written in 2003, so you kind of lose the last 10 years.
I think the story was just he kind of stepped away to do other things. But yeah, it's interesting to see how somebody can kind of come so far and then say, okay, I just want to do something completely different.
Yeah, I can totally see it. That guy basically worked, from the sounds of it, he worked like 80 or 90 hour weeks for 15, 20 years on just gaming and building gaming engines and all that stuff. And I can totally imagine that. And he made, you know, millions of dollars, if not tens of millions of dollars. And like I said, they literally bought Ferraris. I mean, they were like 21 or 22, and they'd go down to a dealership and pay cash. One of them owned multiple Ferraris and would invest six figures into souping them up. So it is that crazy kind of 1980s excess lifestyle tale, you know, of that part of it. But nonetheless, I have a lot of respect for Carmack in particular. He was the programmer behind it, whereas Romero was like the game and level designer. But Carmack, it sounds to me like without him, I don't think any of it would have happened. Well, every year in around December time, we like to talk about our predictions for the next year. And this year, I thought it'd also be fun to review the predictions we made for 2013. So about a year ago, you and I went through, I think I made five predictions and you made four. And we'll run through those pretty quickly and talk about whether or not we feel like those happened or didn't. And then we'll talk about what we see coming up over the next 12 months. So I'll kick us off with my first prediction for 2013. And I said that 2013 would be the year of Pinterest. You know, I've been making this kind of the long call on Pinterest for a couple of years. If you listen back 2 years ago, I think I made a similar call that like Pinterest was just going to grow. I think 2012 was a great year for Pinterest. 2013, I feel like, although it continued to grow and they raised hundreds of millions of dollars in venture capital at an exorbitant valuation, I didn't feel like it was as mainstream. At least I didn't hear about it from the non-techies that I know as much as I did the previous year. So I do think Pinterest is kind of finding its niche in with recipes and the food, you know, restaurants, and there's design, there's this whole tattoo and clothing, and you know, there's a lot of niches where it's a big deal. I do think that Pinterest is a gold mine. I think they have they're much more commerce based, even though they don't have a lot of like commerce stuff going on. They're testing like paid advertisements, and I think they have the potential to be much more valuable than Twitter. I would say that my prediction did not come true, that it wasn't the year of Pinterest, but I actually think that it could carry over, and sometime in 2014 we're going to be hearing more about how much money Pinterest is making. Even though they may not be as large as Twitter in terms of reach, I think they could actually be much more profitable.
Yeah, I don't think that I heard about Pinterest from anybody.
It's crazy, but and yeah, they did raise, you know, $200 to $300 million based on a really high valuation, and they released their API within the last month. There's a lot going on there, but it is. It's like you said, it's not as mainstream as Twitter or Facebook.
One of the other ones I came up with was that Google is going to continue to hose people for using marketing techniques they've advocated that people use for years with various algorithm updates. And I feel like they've done this.
Oh, yeah.
Rob, do you feel that way?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they've done so much. We've talked about it, how they blocked the scraping of their results, you know, so you can't get rank tracking anymore. They're not provided. They've done additional updates. I think there was a Hummingbird update. Yeah, absolutely. That goes in line with one of my predictions. My prediction was more Google changes that will hammer the SEOs, and I don't just mean algorithm updates. And I think that plays in well with what happened, so...
Another one of mine was, I don't foresee Apple releasing any brand new products this coming year, at least not at the scale of the iPhone or iPad or anything like that.
Right. And I think that's correct, right? Because they just released some incremental updates to the iPad and their normal laptops and the desktop. And then they did the iPad mini, but I would call that an incremental as well. I think when you were talking about new products, you were basically saying, are they going to release a watch or a television? Those are the kind of things we discussed.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of mine had to do with WordPress. One of them was WordPress will become even more prominent than it already is. And I feel like that, I mean, that was a fairly safe prediction, but WordPress continues to climb in how much of the internet it powers. And the numbers vary, but I think it's somewhere around a fifth of the internet, like 19% of the internet runs on WordPress. So I don't see that trend subsiding anytime soon. The other prediction was that subscription WordPress plugins would start to come around, would gain a little bit of prominence. I don't think I've really seen that, and I'm surprised. I'm surprised someone hasn't figured out how to make that work yet, but perhaps it'll be in 2014.
Yeah, I haven't really seen that either, but you never know. I feel like it will come around at some point, but one of the problems I see with it is just, I'll say the culture around people who are buying WordPress plugins, because they expect that they buy it once and that's it. It almost feels like you have to have an additional service behind it that is going to continually be updated and be used for other things, because if everything's coming into your website, it feels difficult to justify paying like a monthly subscription for something that you've installed and it's running on your servers and the data isn't really going anywhere. You really need that integration someplace else that's doing something on the back end.
Right. Yeah, you need an external service that you're paying for. So my last prediction for last year was the startup bubble would become more evident, inflated valuations would continue to rise, and there would be either a bursting in 2013 or 2014. And then I said this would only mean good news for those of us who don't need to be acquired in order to build a successful business. Now, startup valuations have continued to rise and become inflated. As I've kind of stepped newly onto the angel investing scene and been looking at valuations people are asking, it's absolutely insane to me to see these $5 million valuations on a company that's basically two people with an angel list profile. Now, nothing has burst at this point. I don't know if it'll happen in 2014 or not, but the acquisition of Instagram for $1 billion, and I don't know, there were a few other this year that were just outlandishly, in my opinion, overvalued based on the value they bring. Yeah, I'd say this one came true. The bursting, whether or not that happens this year, I guess that remains to be seen.
My last prediction was that the Windows 8 was not going to take the world by storm.
I would say that was correct. That was probably a pretty safe prediction at the time.
The thing is, I hadn't tried Windows 8 yet at the time. I played around with it on the Surface Pro at like Best Buy and things like that. So it's not terribly exciting. It's new and it's different, but it doesn't have like, there's like the refinements that I think that it needs that it still just doesn't have yet.
Let's dive into our 2014 predictions. We each have a handful here. My first is that Twitter will become profitable because, you know, they had an IPO, so they had to release their info, and they are not a profitable company. I think they will become profitable in 2014. I also think they will piss off their users in the process because it's going to mean ads, right? It's going to, one way or another, it's going to mean catering to advertisers. Now, the good news is that I think there's going to be a solid opportunity for paid placement and promotion. They're already pushing their paid tweets, their sponsored tweets. But what we have seen with early ad networks, like when AdWords first came up, when Facebook ads first started, and you know now looking at Twitter, and I think Pinterest is another one where this could happen, there are opportunities for small entrepreneurs like us to get in and really learn the system before other people know it. And there's a lot of arbitrage opportunities to get in there at those early clicks. Remember the 5 cent AdWord clicks that people talk about? I think there's potential for Twitter and Pinterest to potentially have those this year, but those things eventually go away. Facebook ads have become more expensive over time. They're still workable, but you know they were cheaper 2 years ago. They were more, I'll say, more effective based on price a couple years ago. So keep your eye out for that.
My first prediction for 2014 is that Apple releasing any sort of a new product is sort of a gimme.
Indeed. So you're saying like a watch or a TV or something?
Yeah, something along those lines. I mean, just something that is completely different than the things that they've put out in the past. It's going to be something that is not an incremental update.
Got it. Yeah, and that ties into my second prediction, which is that Apple will release an iWatch or some type of wearable watch device. There's so many rumors about that being in development. I think you're right. I think they've taken a year off from releasing new products and that they kind of got to get back in the game or else the stock market's going to start punishing them. My next prediction is for SaaS businesses that concierge services will become a requirement if you're in a crowded market. We've talked a lot about this software plus a service, plus a concierge service, an onboarding service, and a hand-holding service. And I think that's going to continue to become, maybe it won't be the norm in 2014, but the exceptional companies are going to do that in 2014. And I think it will become the norm past that because the market is just, they're getting too crowded. There's a lot of SaaS apps. The secret's out that SaaS is subscription revenue and that it's a really good way to go if you want to launch a software company. And so in order to set yourself apart, you have to do things that other people won't. And a lot of developers who can write code don't want to do any type of, it's basically the schlepping. Remember Paul Graham talked about this? He talked about the problems that are hard that you have to schlep through. And a lot of developers are going to avoid this. And so that makes it more low-hanging fruit for people who are willing to do stuff that doesn't scale in order to get their business off the ground. And concierge is one of those efforts.
So this one for me is a two-part one. The first part is that investors are going to pour a lot more money into startups. I feel that way because there's one of two things that's happening. It is that you know the valuations are going up, so investors are just naturally going to start pouring more money into it until it's just no longer financially viable for them to do so, or you know that bubble just bursts. So either way, they're still going to be dumping money into them. But I think another reason why they're going to start doing that is because a lot of the safe haven investments are starting to go away because the economies of the world seem to be coming out of the recessions of the past couple of years. So when that happens, investors naturally start saying, okay, well, I'm going to start taking more risks because these other safe investments, they're no longer paying off for me. So I'm going to start taking those risks because they will start paying off. And then the second side of that is that I think you're going to see a lot more of the high profile acquisition attempts start to be turned down. And one that struck me as bizarre was Snapchat turning down or allegedly turning down the $3 billion offer from Facebook.
What were you thinking?
Yes, I know exactly. What were you guys thinking? I have no idea. I would have just been like, sure, it's yours. You know, I would have taken 2.5. But hey, you know, who's going to split hairs over that?
My prediction for 2014 is that Snapchat, we won't even be talking about them by the end of it. I just can't imagine them actually being a viable social network in 12 months. And I think that this may go down as one of those major business mistakes, not taking the $3 billion check from Facebook.
But I can also see a lot of other people saying, well, Snapchat turned it down and there must be a lot of smart people working over there. So it must make sense, at least at some level, to turn down outlandish purchase offers, especially when Facebook is offering $3 billion. Because if that's the case, then Facebook obviously saw something that they wanted and they wanted bad. So I can see other companies putting themselves in that position and holding themselves up to that standard and saying, well, we have a better product than Snapchat, or you know, we're worth that much too. So I can definitely see people turning down those high offers. Whether it's a mistake or not will kind of remain to be seen, but I really do think that Snapchat made a big mistake.
My next prediction is about Kickstarter, and I'm a major Kickstarter fiend. I've probably backed 20 different Kickstarter projects. And in fact, over Thanksgiving, I think I backed like 5 or 6 just surfing around on my iPad during that weekend. But I predict that this year Kickstarter is going to have a product that is a major multi-million dollar failure. And what I mean by that is a project that raises a bunch of money and then doesn't deliver. They've toyed with this in the past. This has happened on smaller levels, and Kickstarter has increased their verbiage and their risk verbiage, and you have to say, you know, there's a lot of risks in this project and blah, blah, blah. But these Kickstarter projects are getting bigger and bigger, and they're raising more and more money, and it's just bound to happen based on odds that, you know, the tens of millions that were raised in 2013 that are basically pledged to be delivered in 2014, my prediction is that something's going to happen with one of those, and that it's going to be all over the news when it happens. I don't think it will ruin Kickstarter, and I don't think it's the end of the world, but I do think that we'll be hearing about it at some point in the next 12 months.
Well, wasn't there a project to fund a company to develop a competitor to Facebook? I think there was a group of like 5 or 6 people who they were college kids, I think out of New York City, that raised something like $100,000. And I could see that totally going south, because the level of engineering effort that people would underestimate needs to be done to support an infrastructure like Facebook has, I would imagine that those type of people just don't have the understanding of the infrastructure needed.
Geez, I don't even think it's a technology problem. It's the momentum problem. It's the marketplace problem. Because what's a Facebook clone when you have 50 users? You know, that for them to get to critical mass will be insanely hard. Even if they can code what's needed to duplicate Facebook, and I don't particularly doubt that they can, it's going to be the getting critical mass that's going to be the problem. And we're seeing that with app.net right now, right? App.net is they're doing okay, but they are struggling to build quickly. And if you get in there, there aren't very many people that you know in there, because, well, it's just not big enough.
Unless there's some sort of integration with Facebook, and Facebook has kind of locked everybody out at this point. So I don't see that, you know, they're going to be able to suck those users out of Facebook. And nobody really wants to float back and forth between multiple social networks, I don't think. Another prediction I have is that I don't think we're going to see a clear winner in either the game console market or in tablets. I think it's going to go back and forth a little bit, especially in the console market, just because of the difference in some of the games that they have, because there's platform-specific games for the Xbox One or for the PlayStation 4. And I think depending on what games come out is going to dictate a little bit of that back and forth, but those really aren't going to hit their stride for probably 4 or 5 years, just the same way that the previous consoles did.
I can't comment on the game consoles. I don't follow that closely enough. I think with tablets, it depends on how you define a clear winner, because Android is outselling iOS now by 2 or 3 to 1. And so if you mean a clear winner in terms of Android units moved in 2014 versus iOS, I think Android's going to win. Now, on the flip side, Apple has way higher profit margins than any of the Android companies. You know, the company's putting out Android tablets. So if you go based on the actual amount of net profit produced, then I think Apple will probably continue to be the winner in 2014. Now, as we slide into 2015, I think that their margins could be squeezed. I don't think iPad's going to suddenly go away in 2014.
I don't see either Android or iOS pushing the other one out. And I understand that they're fighting pretty hard for market share against each other, but I just don't see either one of them dominating the other. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, because there's some people who prefer a much more open marketplace where they can install anything they want. And then there's others who would much rather have Apple take tight control over the ecosystem and say, these are the things that are allowed and these are the things that are not. And just because you've got what seems to be a critical mass of each faction, I don't see either one of them going away.
We have a lot of Apple predictions here, because my next prediction is that Apple will continue to lose market share in the iOS market specifically. That's both phones and tablets, as history starts to repeat itself. And what I mean by that is, you know, Apple and Microsoft competed with Windows and the Mac OS back in the 80s, and the open version won in terms of market share. And we are seeing a similar trend right now, and we're seeing Android take it over. I think Android is over between 70% and 80%. Of the, if it's the mobile OS market, if it's combined phone and tablet, or if that's just phone, but they are just swarming the market. Now, again, the net profit is still with Apple right now for the time being, but the net profit was also still with Apple in 1982 and 83 as they were battling back and forth against the DOS stuff and IBM's PC. If you look at the trending lines, it's an interesting trend. Now, I say this as someone who essentially owns, in this house right now, there are 8 Apple computers, including laptops, iPads, and mobile phones. And so I am, you know, an Apple supporter and someone who I like being in that ecosystem. But it's going to be interesting times over the next couple of years to see how this plays out and to see if, in fact, history does repeat itself with Android and iOS like it did with Mac OS and Windows.
Why don't I switch over to Google a little bit and say I think that the Google Glass is going to become publicly available in either really, really, really late 2014 or early 2015.
How about more of a prediction? Like, not when it's released, but do you think that it's going to become a mainstream thing? Do you think that a lot of people, that it's going to sell well or that it's going to be a flop?
I think that there are going to be certain applications for it that it's going to do extremely well. And I think that they're going to be in places where you wouldn't necessarily think that they would be or that they should be. And I'll give you an example. In warehouses, I could see them being very, very huge. And the reason for that is because back 12 or 13 years ago, I worked on a project for a warehouse where it was basically, they were switching over from a paper-based system to a voice recognition system. So I implemented all these APIs and everything to talk back and forth between databases and a voice recognition unit, where instead of somebody using all these papers to walk around the warehouse and get all the stuff, they then just would talk into this unit, and the unit would tell them where they needed to go and how much of the stuff that they needed to get. And I could see them taking something like that and switching it over to something like Google Glass, where Google Glass shows them the information as opposed to them talking into a headset and it having it be in voice recognition only. So I think that applications like that, where you need to display a lot of data and you really do need to have your hands free in order to do other things. Construction jobs, I'll say a lot more of the blue collar type jobs that are out there for that type of experience where they do need that data. Anything where they can get rid of the paper, they're going to start doing that.
So then the answer to my question of do you think they'll be successful is no. Because if Google is only able to get Google Glass into niche professional applications, it is not going to sell 100 million units, which is the kind of success that the iPad and the iPhone and recent innovations have. That's like the big mark of like, holy crap, this is an amazing hardware success. If Google sells a couple million Glass units, I would guess that it would be dubbed a failure. And I think if it's a niche thing like you're saying, you know, where, yeah, it's used in doctor's offices or with people in warehouses, that those would be the kind of numbers that it hits.
That's a niche that I could see it definitely going in. But you think about all the different applications for something like that. You could say, oh, well, use it in doctor's offices so that the doctor doesn't have to go back to his computer or go over someplace to log in. That would be one application of it. Or traders on Wall Street, that would be another application. So there's all these, I'll say, really tight niches that it could be used in. But I think that there's a lot of them. And I think that Google's going to depend and rely heavily on their developers to develop products for those different industries to help them sell Google Glass. And then obviously Google is going to want to be able to display advertisements and stuff like that later in the future. But, you know, I could definitely see it becoming a big thing, but I don't think it's going to become a big thing overnight. I think they're going to have to wait until the ecosystem is there for the applications for those different niches.
This is actually a good time I was going to mention something about catching a wave as it's going up. And that's one thing that id Software did in that book, Masters of Doom, I mentioned, is they caught the video game wave and they wrote it and they did really well with it, but they worked hard and they basically caught a growth market. And in the 80s, that was PCs and it was PC gaming. In the 90s, that was the internet. In 2000s, it was mobile. The talk is that in, you know, the 2010s to 2020, is going to be wearables and also, I think, drones, like flyables and stuff, attaching cameras and different delivery stuff to drones. So if you are looking to get way out there, and you're probably going to need funding to do this, or you're going to need to basically work your butt off to learn the infrastructure ahead of people, Google Glass is a place I would look. I would also look at these wearable watches and stuff. These are super risky, right? Because you could spend a whole year investing time, money, effort into being at the forefront of these things, and any one of them could tank. there's no guarantee they're going to work. But those are the places where the biggest green field is, essentially, that if you're out ahead of other folks, just like the people who were out ahead of iOS and got their apps on early are the ones that eventually had the amazingly successful games and actually made quite a bit of money from mobile apps. So my last prediction for 2014 is that integration marketing will pick up steam as more companies offer APIs and become more interconnected. Integration marketing is something I've talked about several times, where you essentially integrate your software with other software in order to do two things. One, to provide value to your users, of course, but then also so that that company will promote you to their audience, and it allows you to bring in some of their users to come use your app. I see more and more people doing this successfully, and there are just more APIs. It's expected now that everybody's releasing APIs, and the need to have integrated data between all these disparate apps is as high as it's ever been. And so I think that integrations themselves are growing, but I also think that there's opportunity here for entrepreneurs to, you know, use these integrations as integration marketing.
So where's the Drip API?
I have a Drip API. We have a JavaScript one and a REST API. If you go to getdrip.com and look at the docs link in the footer.
Well, I stand corrected then.
Very good.
My last couple of predictions are, the first one is more of our listeners are going to start to fly solo. And I think that as the economy recovers and people become a little bit more stable in their jobs, they're going to start to look elsewhere, because they're going to become a little bit more risk tolerant just because the job market is improving, and they're going to see a lot of opportunities. Whereas before it would have been a much bigger risk to quit your job and go do something. And I think that, you know, just based on the general trend that I've seen, I think a lot more people are just starting business in general. So I can see a lot of our listeners kind of going that road and doing their own thing. And then the last one that I have is that I think that targeted marketing at individuals is going to start to become more of a reality. And by targeted at individuals, did you ever see the movie, I think it was Minority Report?
Total Recall is the one I remember, but it may have been Minority Report as well, where they could look at your eyes and it would speak to you by name.
Yes, yeah, it was Minority Report. And I could definitely see that type of tracking mechanism start to become a bigger thing, right? And I've seen it a little bit right now. So for example, if you have an iPhone and you have the Dunkin' Donuts iPhone app installed, it can pop up and give you special offers when you're close to their store. And there's a bunch of other apps that are doing very similar things, but I can see either Apple or Google starting to take some of those things and making them generally available within the platform itself, and allowing other applications to hook into those and start just popping those offers up, so that, you know, when you're close to them, they are going to give you that targeted marketing.
Right. So that's more location-based marketing than individual marketing, though.
It is, but if you have, for example, I have the Dunkin' Donuts app, so they have an idea of, one, they could figure out where I live just based on where I'm going, and then two, if I'm taking the same routes every day, they could basically pinpoint what my route is going to be and then say, hey, well, you're going to go past this Dunkin' Donuts anyway. Let me pop this up 20 minutes or 30 minutes in advance of when we think that you're going to go by there, because you go by here at 8 o'clock in the morning every day. So half an hour in advance, I'm going to pop something up that gives you a special offer so that you think about it before you even get on the road.
Right. I would say I don't even know that that's a prediction, because I think that's already happening, right? You're talking about behavioral based marketing, that it looks like it looks at your behavior, it looks at your location over time, and basically pitches you things. I think that's a big part of Foursquare, isn't it? Isn't that part of their revenue model, is that if you check into a bunch of places, it knows that you're like a customer of those things, and then it makes you offers based on that behavior and location?
It could very well be, which makes me correct.
You're correct already. This is awesome. Congratulations, Mike.
Thank you. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupsforrestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups, or by RSS at startupsforrestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.